I have been looking forward to this little chat all week long because I am joined by retired academic Alan Tuffrey. Alan, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, thank you.
Alan, you are, as I have said in my little introduction, you're a retired academic. So you're a man who thinks about things and studies it from various angles and comes up with what we hope is reasonable and sensible conclusions. Now, we are going to discuss this morning something which I have been watching for 4, maybe 5 months now. And it is how our community has, I won't say changed, because that is the way communities were many years ago, and I think we lost maybe our community ethos. But excuse me, you are going to discuss with me this morning how communities and society in general might emerge slightly better from this pandemic, and we can go on then later in the chat to discuss why there doesn't necessarily need to be extra poverty levied on people as a result of it. But tell me, Alan, why you think that we might come out of this a slightly, or how maybe we might come out of it a slightly better community.
Well, I think we've learned a few things during this pandemic, and it's been very obvious that there's been a lot of kindness. People have been very kind to one another, looked out for one another, especially in local communities. And I'm pleased you started with the idea of community. Because I think people have been looking out for their family and for their neighbours, their elderly relatives and all the rest. And that has been something which we may have lost a bit from times gone by when communities were much more close and friendly, perhaps. But in the last 50 years, people have moved out to suburbs and communities have got broken up a bit. New communities are forming. But I think that kindness, and if you want a posh word for kindness, you can call it compassion, which is a word I like. And that's about doing things for people. Now, we've learned that compassion. We've seen it. We've received it at local level. And I think if we have that, we hang on to that. And I think above all else, we should hang on to the idea of compassion and see where that takes us, both at local, at community level, and perhaps at national and even perhaps greater levels.
There is no doubt about it, Alan, that there has been this crisis. It has thrown up a lot of heroes, some unlikely heroes, may I add, some unlikely, and others who thought outside the box. And I am going to just mention one, and I know you're a man of a sporting vein yourself, but I was extremely impressed at how early, for argument's sake, the GAA got involved, particularly with elderly people down the country. And I see as well a lot of the Dublin footballers got involved as well in relation to, I think it was bringing prescriptions to elderly people and getting involved with elderly groups within their community. Now, the thing, Alan, and the question that I pose to you as an academic, we have seen it done. We have seen how it can be done. How do we ensure that it continues to be done?
I think there are two levels. At the community level, we just have to remember what it's like, how rewarding it was to be kind. I think people are inherently good. People are good and they like to be kind to other people. We've just got out of the way of doing it. Even at the individual level, I mean, happily, I don't have to go into supermarkets very often, but when I do, I nearly always smile or say hello to the person next to me in the checkout queue. It's a bit trickier now from a couple of metres away, but why not? And just pass the time of day. Those are small, perhaps trivial things, but they all add up to something bigger. At the higher level, if you think the way the government has managed this, now, I'm no great fan of any, certainly no fan of any particular party, and certainly not of government in general, but our government, I think, has put people before the economy. In other words, they've shown this compassion, this kindness that I've talked about. Now, some people got left behind, some things weren't managed very well, but on the whole, that's what happened. And I think that's what we want to remember, along with the idea that things that couldn't be done 5 months ago were suddenly done. Now, who'd have believed that the pubs would be shut on 17th of March in this country? Nobody would have believed that. That hasn't happened in, 25 or 30 years, maybe more, since we had the shutdown on St. Patrick's Day. But the pubs were shut, and there were no real complaints about it. We all realised we had to do it. But so when governments say, oh, well, that's a bit hard, we can't do that, then we say, hold on a minute, you could do this and this when you wanted to. Now, let's just have another think. So let's not just take no for an answer when we want things to be better and we want more people to be looked after. And you mentioned poverty at the start. I think that's a very important thing. We can't have people living in poverty and poor conditions in what is a very wealthy country. I think that's just wrong. And we need to say, sort it out, and sort it out quickly. So there we are. There's the sermon.
Yeah, I find it strange as well, Alan, I have to be honest, and I don't want to bring this down a political road at all, but I suppose it's bound to head in some direction and some distance down that political road, but I find it amazing, I have to say, that prior to March, it was unconstitutional, it was illegal, we would be tied up in the High Court so fast that it would bankrupt the country by every property owner in the country. Yeah. With no way could we prohibit the eviction of people, and we couldn't put rent freezes, and we couldn't do this, and we couldn't do that, and like the flick of a switch, it all got done, and there wasn't one High Court case, and no problems.
Yeah, and that's because the people who were affected, the landlords, you know, landlords lost income in a lot of cases too. Now, it's hard to feel sorry for landlords. They're a category we like to dislike. But, you know, that's a real source of income for a lot of people. And they could have sued, and they still might. But I think they realised, most people, they realised that they've got to take the hit along with everybody else. Most people, an awful lot of people, took a hit. They got reduced salaries. They were furloughed and all this sort of stuff. And a lot of people took a big hit. I mean, I'm sure you know people. I know somebody, for example, she's a travel guide. Now, as a travel guide, you haven't had any income since March. In fact, you probably haven't had much income since about October of last year. And the bills still keep coming in, and you still have to pay the bills. You know, you get your, in the north of Ireland, you get your rates bill. And I saw a picture online, and a friend of mine's rates bill, 1,500 quid. A bill for 1,500 quid drops on your mat, and you haven't had any money coming in for 6 months. That's not easy. So we have to think about all those things. And we can't just have people being in poverty. A headline I saw in the paper a couple of weeks ago now, it was in the business section of one of our papers, and it said, roughly, more than one-fifth of children could be left living in poverty if the economy fails to recover. My eye ran over that. A fifth of our children could be in poverty. Now, what's important here? Children being in poverty or something called the economy? Now, that just can't be allowed to happen.
It comes back, Alan, to a point that I made to somebody here, and I'd say I must be going back about 4, maybe even 5 years, and I remember having a discussion on a program like this with a contributor, and my argument at the time was that we need to press the pause button temporarily. Now, this is going back 4 or 5 years, Alan, so bear in mind I'm not that intuitive, but I said that we need to pause, to press the pause button temporarily and make a decision. Are we living in a society, or are we living in an economy?
Now you have it. I think that's exactly right. A friend of mine put it only last week, actually. We were just chatting about this issue. And he said, what are we running here? Are we running an economy, or are we running a society? We're running a society. Now, you can run societies in different ways. We can look around our near neighbour to our east, is running an economy.
I want to come to that specifically in a moment, Alan. So if you can just gloss over that for the time being and keep going, because I want to come back to that specifically, because I have something on the line here that I want to talk to you about, and I find it very interesting. Keep going, Alan. Sorry.
That's okay. So I think the point about that children, fifth of children, that's not an inevitable thing. You know, it's not something which has to happen, and that's how it's often portrayed. Economists often say, you know, this will happen, this will happen. They actually don't know. They think they're a science, but they're not. But it's a choice that we, when I say we, I mean society can make. That's all of us. We can make, we say, look, we're just not having children thrown into poverty because we know what the consequences of poverty in children is. They get less well looked after because their parents don't have the space, mental space, to spend on parenting. And because they're looking to pay the next bill and put food on the table. And this leads to a less satisfactory upbringing and a less satisfactory life. It's not just a problem for a year or two. It's a problem for a lifetime. And it's very hard for people to get out of that. And I think if you want to think economically, that's a cost. You know, worse health care outcomes, possibly more crime, more drugs, all those have a cost for society.
Alan, it has to be remembered that there is a percentage of that prevailing in society anyway as a result of people who are in emergency accommodation, who are in direct provisions, who are homeless. Yep. So now you are going to multiply that by a factor unknown. So it can only get worse.
That's right. If we do nothing. Yes, I mean, I'm really sounding as though I'm on my soapbox this morning. I'm not usually quite as soapboxy as this. I'm much more, but I've spent a fair bit of time thinking about these problems over the last few months, I suppose, 6 months or so, even before the pandemic. But it's been thrown into sharp focus, as like a lot of things, by the crisis, present crisis. We know what the costs are. We know what the outcomes are. Let's use our big brains and think our way out of the problems and do that. When I came across a thing, and now, again, this is highfalutin, and I'm not an economist by any means. You know, they're always going on about something called GDP. This is the important measure of the economy. It actually doesn't measure, as somebody put it, any of the important things. It doesn't measure service industries. It doesn't measure healthcare. It doesn't measure teaching. For example, now I spent my entire life teaching. I'm still doing some teaching in a minor way. So none of that counts in GDP because it doesn't have a price. Only things with a price on count on GDP. So if you can't put a price on it, it doesn't exist for GDP. And that's the measure that societies and economists always talk about. And we really should get over that. It's not something that's terribly important. We need to go back to being compassionate. That's what I think we have to
Alan,
try and do. Just remember that.
Alan, I want to hit reverse and just go back about 5 minutes.
Yeah,
because I want to zone in on this. I found this fascinating when I was getting ready for this morning's programme. Other countries choose to set the balance between compassion and the economy in a different place. Now, I mean, the USA, we all have our opinions on that, and I don't think anything much has changed there, to be honest, which I always think that America is driven by the fast buck and everything is predicated on who can drive the biggest car and live in the most expensive house. But, I mean, Brazil, look, we all know what the Bolsonaro is like. So, but we will look at our near neighbour, and we always, or those of us in the current affairs world, we look upon Britain or Great Britain as Scotland, England, Wales and Northern Ireland. But I notice, Alan, that you don't. You look upon England and Wales specifically in this. You have removed Scotland and Northern Ireland from your thesis. That would lead me to believe that you think that the executive north of the border in Scotland and north of the border here in Belfast have looked at this totally different to Whitehall.
Certainly in the case of Scotland, I don't think not sure that I want to say too much about the north of Ireland, but we can play with that if you like. But certainly Scotland has taken a different view, I think, and has increasingly seems to be differing and drifting away from England, or perhaps it's the other way around. England is drifting away from Scotland. And Wales, I think, is just dominated by England. It's just a question of scale there. So it tags along necessarily. But Scotland has taken different attitudes to closing things down. I'm not sure about how they're financing the unemployment and the furloughs and all of that. But they seem to set the balance, as you say, between the economy and people in a different way. And if we look even further afield, you go to the Nordic countries, which have always been, if you like, more interventionist, more the state gets involved much more. And there's healthcare and social provision and all the rest of it. They put everything first in the Nordic countries. And New Zealand, now, when it comes to pandemics, they had an even more special position than we did by virtue of being an island. But they seem to have got a lot of things right. And that society, certainly under the current Prime Minister, has put people first. In fact, what they say, we are putting people's happiness first, not just well-being. But they're talking about happiness there. Now, that's a really interesting way to think about organising a society, isn't it? That you should... I aim to have a happy population. Now, it turns out that Ireland rates very highly in the happiness stakes when people go out and measure these things. So we tend to be very happy. But there is a lot of poverty here and a lot of suffering that is unnecessary, or should be unnecessary. So I think people, that balance between, you put your finger on it there, Donnie, between the economy and people is where it's at. And the UK, England and Wales particularly, have really put the economy first. Remember those telling words when we first had the pandemic? They talked about herd immunity.
Which as the man said, you saw where that got them.
Yes, it did. Because they thought, it'll play itself out. Yeah, what they didn't realise is that a lot of people will die. And the long-term effects of COVID-19 seem to be pretty nasty. It's not that, if you get a bad dose of COVID-19, it's not a question that you're better in a couple of months, like after a normal flu. There seem to be quite a lot of long-term effects. Now, it's early days. We don't know very much. You have to be cautious about that. But I think they were slow getting started because they thought it would just go. And that's, again, I don't want to sound two-party political, but that's a real conservative laissez-faire way of thinking. And we know in this country we have good cause to know about where laissez-faire thinking gets you. When we were part of the empire, so to speak, laissez-faire didn't help us very much in 1845 and 1847. And the great famines and all of that, and it's not the way I want it. It has to be remembered that I'm a child of the 60s, Donnie. and my politics hasn't changed very much since those days. So that might make me. Some people would say, "Who is this fella? He's a dreamer? He's a utopian?" But somebody says, "If you don't have dreams and you don't have utopias to aim for, how are you going to go anywhere? How are you going to change anything?" So. I'm a great believer in having some ideas and doing what you can to make a change. In that sense, to go back to a word you used earlier on, Donnie, everything is political. Do you remember people saying that? Well, you might be too young to remember people saying that in the 1960s. But everything is political with a small p. If you're trying to make any kind of change in society, then it's political. Now, I'm not a party political person. I've never been a member of any party, and I've no particular wish to join any political party. But I would like to try and influence some policies here and there in whatever way I can. And that's where I've got to now. One of the things about being retired, Donnie, is you have more time to sit and think and write and discuss things. When you have the day job, you're rushing around other people's deadlines. I don't have those very much now. I've got the luxury to think things through and study things a bit more, and I hope getting somewhere. Whether it's coherent and clear and right is for other people to decide. That's fair enough. I'm not laying down the law.
Alan, I wasn't going to go down this road or this rabbit hole, but I can't resist. You've taken me there, so I'll go. I have held the view since March, rightly or wrongly, and you have studied this probably in, well, there's no probably, in much, much greater detail than I have. But I will put my opinion to you, and I would like your comment on it. That Boris Johnson was totally, completely and utterly blinded and besotted by let's get Brexit done. In order to get Brexit done, he had to keep his economy running because he will need money when Brexit comes to pass. And I still say if it comes to pass, but we will take it that it will. With that in mind, did he gamble and lose?
I'm not even sure that it was a gamble. It's very difficult to get into the mind of people like Boris Johnson. And I've been thinking about this too. In particularly in England, Wales, and I think less in Scotland, although I don't know too much about demographics in Scotland, but the people who see themselves as the ruling elite in England are very different to everybody else. When you think about them, Johnson, public school, posh college at Oxford and so on and so forth, never really had a day job. These are people who don't have a pay packet, although he did get a substantial one from the Sunday, from the Times, I think, at one point. But he didn't get a salary in the way that some of us have had salaries, a pay packet every week or every month, whatever it is. These people are different from the people that they rule. Whereas that's not true here. The people who rule us are, there are a few lawyers, a lot of school teachers in the door, auctioneers, publicans, and the rest down the country. They're middle class people, like a lot of us in this country, and some of them we are fortunate enough to have some good working class politicians around, and we think of Tony Gregory in years gone by and a few others, and I think of Senator Rouhan, who is came from very, shall we say, humble beginnings. So I think your Brexit idea is I think has a lot going for it, because I think Brexit is for, they put Brexit before everything else, and whatever it takes, they're going to get out there. There's this large lump of people in the Tory party who want out at all costs, and we might, if you want to go down that road, we might speculate about why they want out of Europe. I have some ideas about that, but that's perhaps going down the road.
But well, these are the people. That is definitely a discussion that we'll have to have on another occasion, Alan. Because I have both ears on you and one eye on the clock. We have 1 minute and 30 seconds left of our chat, and I have no doubt, Alan, we will talk again in the near future. Give me a 1 minute piece of advice for Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar if they're listening this morning, what they should do and how they should approach taking Ireland forward in the next, forget about 12 months, because we cannot, no longer can we look forward like that. I know we have to, but still, for the next 6 months, from now to Christmas, what should they do?
First of all, you've got to start with the principle. The principle is kindness or compassion or happiness, if you want to call it that. That sounds really hippie-ish. But I think they've got to put people first, and they've got to keep doing that, and they've got to get there. They've got to move forward as well as trying to keep people paid, keep the furlough payments going, the pandemic unemployment payments going for as long as they have to. Various economists have pointed out it's never been cheaper to borrow money. In fact, the banks are paying you to take money out of the banks nowadays. So if it takes borrowing, let's borrow. Keep the social change going, and I could list a half a dozen social changes that need going that are on my list of hot topics. But we have to keep going, keep the people first, and let every one of us do our bit in our small way to make this little tiny society of ours a better place, and then we can start thinking about the nation and indeed the rest of the world.
Well, I presume, Alan, that comes from the theory of a happy workforce is a far more productive workforce. Alan Tuffrey, thank you so much for joining me this morning. And if he's listening, a sincere thank you and debt of gratitude to my friend and colleague, Fergus Cattle, for organising this. Alan, it was a pleasure. I really enjoyed it. And I can't wait for our next chat. And I hope it's sooner rather than later. Alan, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Slán. Slán a cara.